Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about feeling confident. And you know, we do need to have some confidence in order to lead, because our participants need to have confidence that we know what we're doing. Yes. So as we often do on this show, because it is unscripted and we take it where it needs to go, we're going to ask a basic question and get our topics. Yes. So the question is, what type of confidence do we as leaders need within our context when we're doing a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, a consensus-building exercise, even a workshop and a seminar? What kind of confidence do we as leaders need, and how are we going to get it? Well, we'll discuss that how as we go along. I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. You know what? I think that this is very true, and we're going to have a basic topic and then some subtopics. And really, most people are saying that the main thing we need as leaders is confidence in ourselves, right? Yes, we have to have confidence in ourselves, and it will show, right? Mm-hmm. And what kind of confidence? Well, we need to have confidence as leaders, right? Confidence that we're, well, that we're the right one for the job. The confidence that we can lead, that we can help, we can get people to reach consensus, right? Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of people are talking about experts and that we need to have the confidence as an expert. Well, we may have been an expert in leadership, right, in getting people together, in mediation. I'm an expert in mediation, right? Yeah, a lot of you are too. But also, if you're talking about outside experts, we can have some confidence that we know somebody who we have confidence in that they'll be a good expert, that they'll know something, that they'll be able to tell us something, well, with confidence, right, that we need to know. At least give us an opinion. Give us their considered opinion. And then we can decide, do we think that that is valid, that's useful to us, right? Yeah. So we have confidence in our experts maybe too, right? In our own expertise and in the expertise of the people we can call in or ask a question of, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about being an impartial third party, that we have confidence that we have the ability to negotiate and to help people reach consensus, right? Yes. A lot of times, especially if we are doing this professionally, we are called in as an impartial third party. Kind of, I don't know if this is my area of expertise. I suppose it is. But you get kind of a reputation in the community, right? Yeah. Hopefully a very good one. And I've kind of got a reputation that I get called in quite a bit when the group has, well, I don't like to say failed, but the group has already been led, there's already been formed, and there's some maybe animosity, they're not quite making it, right? And I get called in to get that straightened out. I get called in as the new sheriff in town. In fact, I sometimes actually say I am to them so that they understand what my role is. That I've been called in to be in charge. I'm the new sheriff in town, I sometimes say. All right, I say it lots. Yeah, some of you have heard it. But it tells you what you want to know, right? It tells you that that, listen up, whatever has come before us that didn't work, we're going to use that as an example of what not to do going forward, and I'm going to help you move forward and get, and a lot of times they're in stalemate. They've got an idea, they've got something in common. It's not that they don't, but somewhere along the line, it went south and they've just got animosity going, right? Right. And so it is important to be able to say, look, this is what's going to go on from now, and tell them the process and the transparency and like that. But you're the impartial third party. And, yeah, a lot of times we are brought in like that, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, when you start out with a group that's already been in existence, but, well, let's just say they need an impartial third party, they need to be taught what to do because they really don't know how to get out of it. If they did, you wouldn't be there, right? Right. I mean, it's as simple as that. So we're brought in as impartial third parties a lot of times, and we have to have a lot of confidence to do that. Mm-hmm. And it must show because our participants need to understand times have changed. We're going forward, right? Right, and I can lead you. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about instilling confidence in others. Yeah. This is kind of an interesting way of putting it. Muhammad and others are saying an habitual ability to instill confidence in others to effectuate change. Habitual ability to instill confidence in others to effectuate change. I like kind of the concept. Thank you. I like kind of the concept of habitual ability because as we gain confidence as leaders, and we're going to talk about how to do that. Pardon me. You don't really think about the fact that you're instilling confidence in others and like that. It's not, it kind of is a habitual ability. It's kind of like instinct, right? It's just the way we present, the way we understand that it needs to be done, the way we deal with our participants. It is kind of habitual ability. You don't really think on it so much as you do it. You get it done. You go forward, right? Yeah, and it's an interesting way of putting it. It's not exactly instinctive, but it is something that you do naturally after a while. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that it's not something that you write down on a piece of paper anymore. You know, you might do it when you're beginning out to remind you that you need to. I see people sometimes, because I'm always interested in other groups, and I belong to some charitable groups and like that, and you know, committee leaders and things. I see people who are very intelligent and very dedicated, and they know what they're doing, but they have an air of hesitation. Do you ever see that? Yeah. I would say that it comes somewhat from inexperience. I don't know that it's a generational thing because I see people of all ages doing that. I mean, it's not just because you're young and this is your first time, but I see it. People are talking about a gender difference. I hate to admit this because it's against my principles, but I do tend to see it more in women where they kind of make everything a question and look uncertain and kind of ask permission of the group for them to lead and to be, yeah. It really doesn't give you confidence in them as their ability to lead. And if you're new to this, and I know we have lots of people, and some of you have listened to this program a really long time, thank you, and you stayed, this is fabulous, and some of you are new to us, and if you are new to the idea of leadership, and you're here because you want to learn how to feel confident about it, you know, stand up straight and clearly, and so that everybody can hear you, and don't speak as if everything is a question. If you have a directive, do it. If the directive turns out to be too strict, kind of wrong, modify it. We're all human. We all understand that. We all say, well, you know, this, we started out doing this, but it's not working. Do we have suggestions, right? But you've already established yourself as being the leader and that you have confidence. Stand up straight and look confident, even if you don't feel as confident as you look, right? Yeah. People often ask me if I'm as confident as I seem. All right, with me, the answer is yes. I've been doing this for 35 years. But there was a time in the long past that I can't remember, right? But I'm certain that when I first started out, I wasn't as confident as I am today, but I'm pretty darn sure that I looked confident. It's really not the business of the group that you are leading that it's your first one, right? Yeah. Stand up straight and think about what your process is beforehand. Be the most prepared of anybody in the room. We've talked about this on prior shows. We're going to talk about it again today. Our prior shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Stand up straight and be the most, and speak directly and clearly. If you have a very soft voice and it is a fairly large room or a large group, you might need some amplification. Get one of those little microphones. I must confess that I have a very, very easy to hear voice. You might have all noticed that even on a radio show, I am clear. It is partially because I am, have rather a deep voice for a woman. Yes. And so this is very true. And I am clear and easily understood. But not everybody is. If it's a small room, practice emoting. Practice speaking out, right? Yeah, practice it. Make sure that you can really, really show what you want. Really, really have some power, right? And also you need to be the most prepared person in the room. That is very important. When I do a mediation, or a workshop or a seminar, I actually go forward and I have everybody, first, all sides individually meet with me, if it's appropriate, if it's a business and I'm the impartial third. I have everybody meet with me first, beforehand. We talk about what they expect, what they want, and whether or not how those expectations might be modified so that everybody understands consensus is something where everybody gives a little and gets some, right? That's what consensus is. That's what compromise is, right? And also, I have each party, each side, really, especially if it's contentious, and even if it's not, they can all get together and do it. If they're really a very in-sync group, but they've called me in because they want to know what to do as the next step, how to go forward, a lot of times we have this in-house corporate because they need to approach administration, they need to approach a government, they need to approach the voters in some way, right? We are all in agreement. The question is how to deal with the outside world and make what we want become truth, become actually make it work. When we have that, I have everybody actually write down their position and what they think and what they're going to and what they want and like that. Actually, on a piece of paper, write it down, seriously, because it makes a big difference when they have to think about it, to write it down, to really put it on paper, to really talk to each other and decide what is it that we are hoping for? What's our best result? Let's think about that. Huh. What's our best hoped for results? Well, this is important because sometimes it causes them to really modify it. Because when they go to put it down on paper, they find out, I make them do this before we meet in person. so we have something to talk about, so I know what they want. It solidifies their ideas. And when you go to put something down on paper and really talk it over, sometimes what you thought you want isn't exactly what you actually want. And it turns out that what you thought you want is kind of, all right, I'm not going to, people are saying kind of stupid or unreasonable. We'll just say that it makes you think about practicalities and whether or not what you think you want is going to be modified by what is a real-world result, by what you really is really reasonable, right? Yeah, and that's very important. It's very important to think about what is it that we actually in real life would like. Yeah. So that's very important too, that to actually be the most prepared so that even if it's your first time, you feel confident. You've read everything. You've met with everybody. You yourself have sat down and had to think about it. And you have done what we always do at Recipe for Peace Now. You've also thought about your preconceived notions and whether or not they're coloring your thinking and whether or not it's reasonable. And we have them in mind so that in case you have to modify them, it won't be a nasty surprise. Right? Right. Yeah. And that's very important, too. So we're going to stand up tall. We're going to look confident, which is kind of half the battle. And we're going to be the most prepared person, so we feel confident because we are. We're cool. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people are saying that to be effective leaders, we need participant confidence in us. That's the idea. To be effective leaders, we need participant confidence in us. And how can they have confidence in us if we don't have confidence in ourselves? Right? Right. Yes. Very important. Mm-hmm. And also, this is true, we were going to talk about civility rules further down, but they permeate everything we do. Recipe for Peace Now has very few actual rules, as in you must do this. But one of our things that Recipe for Peace Now has as a rule is the civility rules. And I know a lot of you have heard this talk quite a bit because we do it every time, I think. But basically speaking, it means that we will not be rude to one another. Nobody will be rude to anybody else. We will act in a civil manner towards each other and with respect at all times. It's like confidence. You must model it as leader. Yes. If you want them to have confidence in you, you must model confidence in the process, in yourself, in them. Same thing with civility rules. If you want them to be civil to one another, you must be civil at all times. You're the good example. You're the leader. And always remember that. Remember that the leader is the good example. You cannot ask people to do something that you do not do. Because we don't have one of those do as I say, not as I do type things. No. We must be the model of decorum and confidence so that we can go forward with confidence and decorum. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So, first off, we're going to be talking about confidence in ourselves as leaders. Yes, I am getting to the topics. But a lot of people ask what to do, and it's like, well, yeah, even if you're new, it doesn't mean that you don't know anything, because by the time you get to be leader, you'll have learned a lot because you'll be completely prepared for the unpreparable. Yes, because people change and you must be able to modify too. Yes, I didn't mean that there would be a script. Yeah, there's not even a script for this show. Okay, so we need confidence in ourselves as leaders. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we need to do is we need to know how to get that. And Perry and others are talking about experience, which leads to confidence in ourselves. And a lot of people are asking about how to get the experience. I think that you should, before you become the leader, before you step up and say, I'm going to do it, or maybe you've gotten a new position where you are more management, for example, and you are the head of something and you need to negotiate and you need to maybe talk with outside vendors even and like that. This is all a leadership and negotiation thought, reaching consensus too within your department perhaps. You need to get some experience ahead of time that, I don't know how to say this more subtly, isn't the real thing that will affect your job, right? Yeah, you want to go out and kind of test your skills, right? Well, I think that the best way to do that is to not, you don't necessarily have to be the leader, because you're not going to be, but you should join a group, a committee, an organization, something you feel passionate about. We all have something we would like to have in the world. I'm afraid that I'm passionate about lots of things, so I belong to lots of different kinds of groups. But join something where you see leadership in action, right? So that you can see how it's done. And it's actually quite interesting, especially when you're new at the game, but also I'm still a participant in a lot of groups, primarily because I don't have time to be the leader. A lot of times they ask me to be the leader because I have a reputation, and I say, I am interested in helping you. I would love to, but I just plain ordinary don't have the time to do leadership, but I will participate and act as an expert when you need me. Right? Right. That's reasonable. But for those of you who are new, join some groups where you participate and watch leadership in action. And also, hear what your fellow participants have to say. Right? Yeah, because, you know, they all talk about the leader, right? And about how it's going and whether or not this is a good group and whether we're getting anywhere and like that. This is all a learning experience for you. You will learn what people think, right? How they react. And then you can go forward and say, oh, this is not what I expected, or this is what I expected, right? Yes. So you need to have some leadership experience. Well, let's experience how it's going. Let's experience it for both ends. Let's watch the leader, and let's listen to participants who have maybe even been in other groups and have an opinion. And this is all learning experience for us. This is how we know how to gain some confidence, and how we know what it should look like. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the how-to, right? Volunteer. If it is possible, you might even shadow someone who's a very good leader. Sometimes people will let you do that if you are in an area that they have a particular interest in and they can't do it all, and you're very enthusiastic and intelligent and like that, and you say, could I please see how it's done? Could you please introduce me? That kind of a thing. Most of us who are experienced will do that, not necessarily with actual paying clients, but with organizations that need help and we'd like to bring in more. You know what I mean? I do that. I do it. It's like mentoring. I do that with young people for organizations that I have a particular passion for, and I can't do it all, and it needs more leadership. So I'm like, yes. And then they start to take over some of the responsibilities, which is a fabulous thing. And they also expand, which is also a fabulous thing. Yeah, it's a way to really... Also, I'm afraid, because I've been affiliated with a lot of organizations for some time, it's also a way to bring organizations that are been in existence a while and do things a certain way, but the world is changing and with technology going in different directions. And I like to see young leadership, because they take the organization into a more modern direction. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of organizations that have been in existence a while, they talk about attracting young people and like that, because they're kind of aging. And I always sit there and I go, what's with the attracting? We have young people already here. Let's move them up into leadership positions, and we won't have to guess what it is that they like or want to do. They will tell us. What a concept, eh? Yeah. Anyways, it's always, this is always a surprise to organizations. It's like, really? I'm like, yes. They can talk. Yeah. So, so silly. And so it is, but it's a way to bring in new blood too. So, and not necessarily even new blood age wise, but new blood expertise wise, right? And leadership wise, yeah. Because certainly I know I have no idea how old most of you are, come to think of it, but because we don't take a survey, but it is important to bring new people in. And one of the ways is to let them shadow you. And I do. I put them into co-leadership positions. And then eventually they morph into being the leader and I am the mentor, which is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how to get experience. A lot of people are talking about confidence in leadership, about transparency, right? And transparency is, Laura and others and Perry are talking about transparency and knowing what to expect. I think transparency is very important. I actually, when I get a new group, as we go along on all of my clients and groups and like that, and even workshops and seminars, I like to give people an idea of what's going to happen. Not exactly what's going to happen because I don't have a crystal ball and I don't know exactly what's going to happen, right? Right. I mean, it's impossible to really know. But I like to give people an idea of where we're going and even so much as the process, right? How often we're going to meet. We might come to an agreement about a certain date or time, right? Where? I announce comfort things like where's the bathroom, that kind of stuff. How long we're going to go so that you can call your ride and tell them, text them, right? Because a lot of people are meeting somebody else or whatever. We usually, well, it depends how we're meeting. I mean, it might be in the middle of the day. It might be in the evening. And I'm like that. And I like to tell everybody, well, for example, I say that all of us have met individually before. So that everybody knows that I talk to everybody, right? And not just them. And I announce the civility rules that we're going to have turn-taking, for example. I'm speaking that everybody will get a turn. And then I like to go around the table and introduce ourselves, right? Yeah. And even if we are doing it conference call-y, I like to say, or Skype, I like to say, now how... What's new? How's it going? And how we will reach each other in between meeting times, right? Yeah, we need some sort of contact point. You might use one of those free services where you kind of put in all kinds of information and everybody sees it, right? Yeah, a way to keep connection, and we all know that we're working on something, and if somebody has a question, they can get it answered, for heaven's sakes. We're not working in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Right. So transparency, what can we expect? Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, people think of it as economic, where'd the money go? Well, no, it's the whole thing. Let's feel comfortable that we know how this is going to work. Because people hate it when they don't understand what's going on. I hate it when I don't understand what's going on. So I'll assume all of you hate it too. Yeah. Let's find out what we're doing. Let's see how this is going to work out. Mm-hmm. Adrian and others are talking about body language, and I do think that's true, too. You remember when we started this, I told you to stand up straight, look confident, and speak with authority? That's all body language, right? If you are twitching or biting your fingernails, by the way, if you've got habits like that, this is an old trick, but it is an actual good one. Ordinarily, I don't think that you should play with stuff in your hands and like that because it's distracting. But if you know that you have some sort of a habit that comes out when you're nervous, like I've seen people bite their fingers, bite their fingernails, their cuticles, and like that, or do something distracting with their hands, clasp and unclasp. I don't know, jingle change in their pockets, that kind of stuff. Admit it to yourself that you have this habit. Admit that it's going to come out. I mean, not to anybody else, but to yourself. And do something about it. If it's something to do with your hands, try holding something so that you don't do it. Try holding a notebook, a legal pad, not a pen because you'll twiddle with it, something like that, just to remind you not to do it. Right? Right. Yeah. Something, yeah, that I've seen people, I recommend something like a legal pad or something like that that looks like you have notes, or make notes on it, you know, so that you're not doing whatever kind of nervous habit it is that you know you've got. It reminds you, right? Yeah. Yeah, people are saying all kinds of things. People are saying to take a calming kind of a drug or supplement. I don't know because I don't like them. So that's a personal thing to you. I find all of that stuff makes me kind of sleepy, which is not real good for my brain power. Yeah. But anyway, so body language is indeed important. And we've done a whole show on body language, so you can go back into the archives and look and listen to it. But yes, if you've got some, you know, if you've got some sort of a nervous habit, do something to remind you not to do it, if possible. Right? Right. Yeah. Yeah. People asking about a facial twitch. I have a friend who had at one time, and I don't know if this works for everybody, who had at one time kind of twitchy habits that weren't like a palsy. You know what I mean? It you could control them. Because sometimes people have something that you really, your handshake or something, and that's not something that you can control, that they shake all the time. Sometimes you have something that's just one of those things, if you know what I mean. And this is kind of, I don't know how he found this out, and maybe this is kind of eccentric, but in order to not do it, it was kind of obsessive compulsive disorder type things, and it needed to be reminded not to do it, and it really took over when, you know, when he got stressed with public speaking, caused him to become stressed. And even when he was in a group, because I first had him as a participant in a group, he was very intelligent, but he didn't like speaking out. You had to actually call on him to take his turn. And when he took his turn, he kind of didn't exactly stammer, but he had kind of a minute there's worth of, I can't get it out because I'm so nervous, and not exactly nervous, but so stressed-like, right? Yeah. I don't know if any of you have that, because we tend to be leaders, and leaders don't tend to. But if you've been thrust into a leadership position and you have that, where you've got something that kind of like a need to twitch or to stammer or something like that, but it could be overcome. You know what he did after a while? And he told me that a psychiatrist, some sort of a counselor, psychologist, somebody he went to told him to do it. He actually had a thick rubber band on his wrist, and he snapped it real hard when the problem starts, to remind him, to kind of shock him out of doing it. And I don't know why, but this actually worked. I saw it work. So, I mean, it's a good thing to try. It doesn't have anything to do with drugs, and it can't be hurtful. I mean, it won't hurt you any. And you could suggest this to people. It was just a rubber band like you get in the office supply store. Just one of those thick rubber bands. And he had it on his wrist, and he pulled it, and he snapped it real hard a couple of times. And then he took a deep breath, and he could go forward. And it prevented everybody having to watch him go through the this series of twitchy type things, which I think if everybody's staring at you, makes them worse, right? Because everybody's staring at you. Yeah. So it prevented them from having that need to do it. Yes, a regular rubber band that he wore on his wrist all the time. Just a little flesh-colored rubber band. And on his only on one wrist, it was on his right wrist because he wore a wristwatch on the other wrist, right? Yeah, I don't know that it makes a difference which side. But he actually wore it, and he snapped it real hard a couple of times against it. You know what I mean? He pulled it and snapped it back on his wrist. And it did seem to get him over the hump. So I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad one, but it worked for him. I saw it. And it was, I mean, really, it was like a miracle. I mean, it was really a good thing. And, yeah, so isn't that funny? A couple else of you have seen this, too. And it's something to try. It won't hurt you any. And you can suggest it to somebody, really delicately, I think. But, yeah, I've never seen it before after, but it worked for him. And there are several people in our group today who say that they have seen it and it actually works. There we go. Something about pressure points. I have the vaguest notion if there's an actual physiological reason why it works, or it's just a reminder. Just a reminder not to do that and breaks the cycle. So anyway, so that's body language, I think. Mm-hmm. The next topic, we're going to go forward now, because otherwise we not only won't make the recipes, which is doubtful today. A lot of times we don't, and I apologize, because we have such fabulous conversations, but we won't get through our topics. So the next one is that leaders are the experts, or they have a connection to the experts and confidence about it. Mm-hmm. And Hussein and others are making a real good point that the main thing as leaders we have confidence in is we have confidence in ourselves to know when you need to call in an outside expert, right? Yeah, not everything needs an outside expert. We can talk it over amongst ourselves. We can look it up. You don't always need to call someone in. And that's, you have to have the confidence to know when it is that we really need somebody else to chime in on this, to help us. Sometimes we just need the expert because we could use the third party impartial again to give us some direction and get us out of a stalemate, out of an argument that has formed. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we have the confidence to call in an expert, right? To call in somebody or to be the expert ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, this is an interesting point that Cheryl and others are making too. Cheryl says sometimes you need the confidence to bring in opposing views to argue the merits. Yeah. You know, there's something to be said for that. I do it all the time. Especially if, for example, we want to put something on the ballot or we want to change some sort of a policy within the corporation or the organization, right? You need to have the confidence as leader to say, you know, let's bring in some opposing viewpoints. Let's see what they have to say. Let's see what their arguments are. Let's find out if they really are completely opposing. Maybe we are closer than we think. It just seems like we're not. But we really are. We're pretty close. We're okay. We have the ability to listen to the other side and to find out what's going on, right? So our opposing viewpoints, the opposition, might not be as opposition as we think. Actually, that's always kind of nice to find out in all truth and honesty. But you have to have the confidence to say, let's talk to the other side. Let's hear their merits, because a lot of times there is some merit. It depends on your opinion, but there's some merit to the other side, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Himeko and others are saying that also the leader has to use their experience and their reputation to know who to bring in as the expert, right? Yeah, who do we know who would really be interesting? who would really know something, who would be really able to add to our understanding, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about being an impartial third party to assist the negotiations. That's actually our next topic. Yes, we're going to bring in somebody, but also we are the impartial third party expert. We've been brought in to assist the negotiations. It's a lot of times you're not necessarily brought in to replace the present leader, but to assist them in having success. Right? Right. Yeah, and that's really a little bit different than replacing, and also more welcomed, right? Yeah, because nobody wants to be replaced, but they could use some help, and that's a much more palatable thought, right? Much more welcomed. Oh, I could use a little bit of assistance with this. I can admit that. And therefore, we're going to go forward in a welcomed manner. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, people are talking about being brought in after others have failed. I never use the word failed in front of them, at least. Because that implies that they're all kind of stupid. They should have done better. And nobody wants to have been the one that failed. Mm-mm, bad thing. Now, we didn't fail. But we do need to know how to go forward, well, more successfully. How's that? Yeah. Failed being an ugly word. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talking about the civility rules. Remember, that means that we will not be rude to one another and that the leader has the confidence to model the civility rules and really be an example. Mm-hmm. The main thing about the civility rules is I like to actually announce them, even if I think I'm not going to need them, even if the group is naturally kind of civil because they're not really fighting with each other. They're just trying to figure out how to go forward in the best and most appropriate manner. I like to announce them, explain it, so that we all know not to be rude to one another, and then they all go, well, of course not. And you go, good, I won't be rude to you either. I'm the example. I'm the good example. But if you need to enforce civility rules, and quite frankly, a lot of times you kind of do, you need to explain what's going to happen. That's transparency. We're going to be civil. We're going to take turns. I indeed like to actually, if we have a lot of speakers and everybody has a time limit, I like to set an actual kitchen timer that go tick, 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 ding, because then everybody knows that they've had their fair share. And that they can see how much time they've got left. It's very visual, mm-hmm. and very fair. Everybody thinks they haven't had their time if you keep the time, like you're being biased against them. It prevents that sneaking feeling, if you know what I mean. Civility rules need to be enforced immediately. Don't wait until you've let people get away with it and now it's getting worse. Immediately, as soon as something turns uncivil, explain that that's not the way we do things. Consistently, even if you're feeling kind of tired and it's the 900th time this evening, consistently and fairly. You can't show favoritism to one side or another. That's why you're called an impartial third party. Even if secretly in your heart, because we're humans, you kind of think one side is better or more reasonable than the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Avishi and others are talking about asserting authority and about how the answer is you must, of course, as leader, assert your authority. Because we've already interacted with each other, remember we've met on all sides, have met individually, we've had some passing of opinion papers and like that. I'm the leader, right? So I have authority. Some groups, And this is somewhat cultural, but depends on the type of group. For example, if they're all volunteers who are dedicated to a cause, is different than a corporate group that is people of the same position within the company being forced to come. You see, it's different. There's an enthusiasm level difference. There's an expectation difference. Some groups are more of a team, even though you are a leader, you are a team member also. You're just kind of the guiding team member. Like usually for one of those volunteer groups, maybe. And some groups you need to assert more authority. Remember, I told you at the beginning of the show that I actually say there's a new sheriff in town for groups that have, let's not say failed, but been less than successful, and they need to call in me, the impartial third party, to get it going and to get a result, right? But they're all still there in the group, and maybe even the unsuccessful leader is still in the group, so there's a real undercurrent of resentment. Those kind of groups need more of an assertion of authority. I don't know how to explain this to you because it comes somewhat with experience, but it's a feel that you get. Also, it is somewhat of a cultural thing, not even necessarily an ethnicity type culture, although some actual cultures expect the leader to be more like teacher. And tell me what to do, and I will do it. And some cultures expect the leader to be more like team member. We're all in this together, and we'll find the solution together. Does that make sense? And my style, to a certain extent, modifies depending on group expectations and what will be successful, is what it really is. I modify my leadership style to be successful with this group. And that's really the truth. I want them to succeed. Therefore, I modify how I deal with them. And sometimes, as you go along, you modify. Sometimes you start out more as teacher and leader, and then you become more of leading team member. As the group becomes comfortable with themselves, right? And I told you it's not necessarily an ethnic culture. Some organizations, I deal with a lot of multinational corporations. Some organizations have a corporate culture that is kind of overlaid on everything they do, right? It kind of permeates. And so that corporate culture is also important, right? Yeah. So it's a matter of asserting authority in a way that will get whatever it is that you need done. You know, this is true too. Germaine and others are talking about the fact, and we, I, at Recipe for Peace Now, we call them invisible participants. It's the people not in the room who your participants are going to talk it over with and kind of report to. And then those invisible participants will have an opinion that will kind of become the opinion of your participants next time you get together. Does that make sense? Yeah, they're influencers is what they are, right? These invisible participants. They need to be known. They're part of the equation. You have to think about them. We will ask about them, right? And I like to invite them into the room, real upfront, real transparently. Come and talk to us. Come and give us your wisdom, right? Yeah, this is a way to get people to really, really come and participate too. And really hear all sides and not just give their opinion based on, well, really hearsay. The opinion of the person who is there, who is, really kind of saying it secondhand, right? Yeah. And with a little luck saying whatever it is that the influencer wants to hear. But we want to hear you it firsthand. We'd like you to come. We'd like you to participate. We'd like you to give us your wisdom and your advice, right? Yeah, I'd like to make the invisible visible. I'd like them to at least be, to come in as experts, perhaps, even if they want to be anonymous. Mm-hmm. And as leader, you need to keep the anonymity vow. You need to, if you say that something will be anonymous, it needs to be anonymous. You cannot just tell after you said that you wouldn't. Does that make sense? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because people have to have confidence in you that you will be trustworthy. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's always invisible participants. Mm-hmm. We also talked about instilling confidence of the participants for the leader, right? That the participants have to have confidence in us. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting way of putting it. Riki says that the leader is alpha dog. I never thought of myself that way. The leader is alpha dog. Well, it is kind of, because we're the ones that everybody looks to for some guidance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, alpha dog refers to like sledding, where that's the front, the lead dog, and then it's gone into the American slang language. Yeah, it means that you're kind of in charge and everybody needs to look to you and have confidence that you being in charge is a mighty fine thing. Elizabeth and others are talking about efficiency and that you should keep everybody in the loop and really, really get information disseminated and to really, really be efficient about the whole thing. Yeah. If you cannot do it yourself, and quite frankly, most of us are kind of busy leading, right? And we have multiple groups in process. If you cannot do it yourself, then you need to hire out. If you've got the budget, it would be best if you could have a professional case manager, right, who handles really well all of them, right? But they're really good with the computer and sending information around and like that and really efficient and keep spreadsheets. If you cannot do that, you can deal with interns. It's a little dicey because, of course, interns are inexperienced by their nature, right? Right. So it's a little bit more tricky to deal with interns, but it could be done. You could use interns, and that they'll need some guidance. And I'm never certain if they are an actual effort saver or really more work than you care to think about. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know if this is really saving us time and effort or it's just taking time and effort. So that's a concept that you have to think about. But interns do, because they're usually people who are working for college credit, right? And so they're kids, and they're going to need some watching and some training. Mm-hmm. So efficiency might or might not suffer. Zoe and others are talking about transparency. We talked about that, of how you need to tell everybody what's going on. But the next thing we're going to talk about, Mohammed and others are talking about empathy. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important for gaining the confidence of your participants in you, but also in each other, and confidence in the process, and confidence that we're going to make it, we're going to have a successful outcome, this is going well type confidence. And that's really, really, really important, because you have to have confidence that this is a good thing, that we are making it, we are going to succeed, right? And in order to do that, as Muhammad and others are saying, you need to have empathy for your fellow creature, for your fellow person in the group, and they need to have empathy for you too, right? And empathy, my friends, is not agreement Remember that empathy is not agreement, it is understanding. Right? Understanding. How are we going to gain this understanding concerning each other and concerning what needs to be done? Excuse me, took a sip of water there. Yes, thank you. My voice does sound better than last time. I was kind of hoarse. Yes, how are we going to gain this empathy? Yes, thank you. Those of you who have been here before and are loyal listeners, thank you all for being here. You gain empathy by using the 5W questions, right? You ask them who, what, where, when, and why. The 5W questions, so that you know the basis for whatever it is that's been brought forward. We need empathy, understanding, not necessarily agreement. I mean, you might agree, but that's not necessary. Understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy. 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, why. Who, what, where, when, why. The 5W questions. Yeah. And they are tremendously important in allowing us to understand what's happening, who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no, yeah, a lot of people ask if we ask them all at the same time. No, you break them out as you need them, right? And I like to find out how we're doing just at the beginning. We say what it is that we've been doing. What it is that we think about it, right? I want to know. Everybody wants to know. And everybody needs to have empathy for you, the leader, too. Empathy goes in all directions, right? It's interesting. It is understanding. And then if we all understand each other, we can go more towards the center for all of us to modify our thinking and reach consensus. Because we all do want the successful outcome. But sometimes we want it for completely different reasons. It doesn't mean we can't get along and reach the successful outcome, but we do have to understand that we've got kind of different ideas about it. There is nothing wrong with that. It's a matter of empathy, of understanding. And the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how you create a team. This is true. Demi and others are saying that's how you create a team. Mm-hmm. And now, remember all this confidence and like that? It goes both ways between participants and leaders, right? Yeah. What kind of confidence do the participants need? We've got like 1 minute to talk about it. But it goes both ways, right? They need to have confidence in you and in the process. And in their team, right? That's how we get the empathy. And in the fact that we're going to succeed, right? And that we can work together, even though we're very different and we might have very different reasons for being there. But the outcome that we seek will help us all, is good for all of us. And therefore, this is our moment to shine. This is our moment to really go forward, right? Right. This is our moment to say, look, we're going to really think about this. We're going to really do it. And we're going to go forward. Mm-hmm. Empathy and understanding that we really can, that we're really capable, right? Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that we can go forward. My friends, we are going to have to do the recipes next week. You guys all knew that. We have that a lot around here. But we had such a wonderful discussion, and we are now out of time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your wonderful ideas. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like, you can Well, listen to the prior shows. Yes, hello. It's kind of like hello. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.